My Life as a Foodie is brought to you by BarkBox.com. We love BarkBox, but not as much as our dog Rex. Say hi to everybody, Rex. Come on, dude, like you mean it. Yeah, now we're talking. BarkBox is great. You tell them how big your dog's bark is, choose a plan, a 1, 6, or 12-month subscription, and every month, they'll send you a box of innovative toys and treats just right for your dog. Shipping is free, and you can cancel at any time. Sign up today, and listeners of the show will get 1 month added on to your subscription free when you sign up for 6 or 12 months. Just visit getbarkbox.com/foodie to take advantage of this special offer. Every month, BarkBox picks the best all-natural treats and innovative toys to match your dog's unique needs, including allergies and heavy chewer preferences. Edibles are made in the USA and Canada, and 100% of all products are tested on animals, their own. Because if it's not good enough for their dogs, it's not good enough for yours. It's cute, too. Every month, they have a theme like Country Fair, Bark Ball, Poo York City, Brooklyn Hipster, stuff like that. So it keeps things fun for you and your dog. Now, Michelle and I are deeply embedded in the dog business now, and everyone raves about BarkBox. Seriously, it's a real hit. It's a great way to try a variety of treats and toys from local and small businesses that you would otherwise be unable to find anywhere else. And if your dog doesn't like something in the box, they'll send your dog something they will love free of charge because they want your dog to be happy. They care that much. So take advantage of this special offer. 1 month free with your paid 6 or 12-month subscription. Visit getbarkbox.com/foodie and make your already happy dog even happier. But I know a lot of people who are commuting more on bicycle now. I see it on Instagram, Facebook, articles in magazines, everywhere. And it's really great to see cycling become part of daily life for a lot of people. And I read this one post that this guy wrote about how he does all of his grocery shopping by bike only. And, you know, it keeps him from buying too much stuff. It has to fit in the basket on his bike. But he says he has to be careful, because the basket that he installed on the front of his bike sometimes gets a little full, and he's worried about things falling out. And I guess last week, he was shopping, and he bought this bottle of bourbon, an expensive bottle. And he was a little worried that if he crashed or it fell off the bike, he might break this bottle. So in his infinite wisdom, he decided to drink the entire bottle of bourbon before he got on the bike. And he said it was a good thing he did that, because he fell off the bike 8 times before he finally reached home, and it would have been just a terrible loss. Alrighty then, welcome back. Got a full show for you today. We're talking about beer, a little about beer, and then we'll finish with beer. So, basically beer. I've produced a lot of content lately. I know that I've churned out a lot of shows in the last month. And I just had written a whole list of things that I wanted to make sure I talked about. And so, you know, I've got a lot to say. Obviously, a long layoff produces content. So, any of you who haven't had a chance to catch up, I'll probably take a bit of a break after this so you can just kind of catch up on everything, and hopefully I'm still entertaining you. We're going to discuss beer a lot today, and I'm going to pepper the show with audio segments from one of my favorite programs that I really wish never got canceled. It got hosed entirely, actually. It's Brewmasters with Sam from Dogfish Head, and it's from the unaired episode Three Beers for Batali, where Sam is offered this opportunity to open a small brew pub inside of Batali's Eataly in New York and brew three signature beers for the brew pub. Now, this particular episode never got aired, so no one saw it. It was released on the DVD outside of the US, Why that is, I have no idea, but I found it on YouTube. And I do recommend buying the DVD, though. If you're interested in the day-to-day life of a brew pub and what it's like for a head brewer of a brewery to, you know, presented with challenge of coming up with new ideas to create beers, and what it's like to run a brewery, it's beyond excellent. $9 for the DVD on Amazon. So I put a link on the website, mylifeasafoodie.com, if you're interested in buying that. The show was great. Produced by 0.0, which is Bourdain's production company. But they put this show up against Sunday Night Football. So the ratings were going to be piss poor right out of the gate. And that's why the network said it was canceling the show. But Bourdain said it was because Discovery, the network that was airing the show, had received pressure from a major beer company that said it was going to pull all of their advertising from the network if they didn't cancel the show. So they did. Now, whether Bourdain was right or Discovery was right, because both arguments make sense, it was a shame to see this show leave the air, because I would love to have seen this continue, even if each season featured a different brewer, like Mind of a Chef. In fact, if they ever decided to go back to this and do like Mind of a Brewer, I would watch that shit. I know a lot of people who would watch that. I just wonder why anybody would put a show geared toward mostly men up against football. Football actually owns a day of the week that used to be owned by God. I mean, think of Sunday in the fall, and you don't think about anything other than football. You might think of church before 10 a.m. on the West Coast, but that's about it. Honestly, I think the only series that might give Sunday Night Football a run for its money would be Game of Thrones at this point. But you don't see HBO trying that shit. They're not that dumb. Anyway, quick story here while we're talking about beer. Maybe one of the most enjoyable and memorable times in my life were the 8 years that I spent working at a photo lab here in Irvine. It was a low-paying job at a sweat house. My bosses were ridiculously hard to work with. The deadlines were horrible. And I still have nightmares sometimes of being stuck there. But it was the people that I worked with that made the whole experience well worth it. I made a lot of friends there. Some I still have to this day. The majority of the guys that I worked with were right off the boat from Vietnam. And this was my first exposure to Vietnamese culture and my subsequent love affair with Pho. And the guys that I worked with were funny and really hard to understand at first. But after a while, you kind of get used to the way they talk and the way they pronounce things. And you actually start to emulate it, which I still do to this day, some of it. And they taught me a lot of dirty words and phrases. Du ma mê means fuck your mother, which is not very nice. An kut means eat shit. We said that a lot. If somebody really pissed you off, you'd say an kak dao nye, which means eat my dick. Now, I was disrespectful back then, all right? So I didn't bother learning nice things to say to them, which a responsible adult would have done. Right? And they tried to teach me how to say nice things too, but I wasn't interested in that. I just wanted to know how to curse at them if they pissed me off, or I wanted to break their balls, which we did a lot of back then. All right, there's a story here, all right? So bear with me. I have to give you backstory first. Some of these guys had really funny names. Not funny, just funny to me. And you got to remember, I was in my early 20s, but I acted like I was 12. I still do, actually. I worked with this really nice dude. His name was Hung, spelled, as you can imagine, H-U-N-G. And he had a lot of friends that were still in Vietnam and some family there. And occasionally a new guy would show up to work in his department, and he was in charge of this department. One day I come into work and I clock in. And we had these punch cards with our names on them. And we had to punch in and out every day like Fred Flintstone at the rock quarry. So one day I go to punch in, and I see a time card right underneath mine with a new name on it. His first name was Fuck, but it's spelled P-H-U-K, which I later was told is pronounced Fook. But I'm 23 at the time. My snark is in full rage mode in my 20s, you know. So I didn't call this dude Fook. I called him Fuck. And I can't remember his last name, but I do remember that I was upset that his last name wasn't Hugh, because Listen, that's a joke that's just built in, and I love when jokes write themselves. So fast forward about a month, maybe 2 months, and I come in one morning, and their whole department is a buzz, people running in and out. And I was wondering what the hell everyone was talking about. One of the guys told me that Fook apparently either had a really bad day the day before or a really good one, because he had gone home, sat on his porch, and drank an entire case of beer before going to bed. Now, for any of you who don't know what comprises a case of beer, that's 24 12-ounce cans, or 288 ounces of beer. And it was Budweiser, or Bud Light, or Coors, or something like that. So it wasn't anything too heavy, but that's still 24 cans of beer. Right away, I started doing the math, and assuming that this guy got off at 4, like the rest of us, and went to bed at maybe midnight, that's 8 hours of drinking, which is about 3 cans of beer per hour, nonstop. So I ran to their department to see what kind of condition this guy was in, because I don't know anyone who could polish a case of beer in an evening and not come into work the next day just wrecked. Now, he looked blitzed half the time anyway, so I really didn't know if that was just how he was normally. But here was this guy. He was there doing his job, business as usual, didn't look any different than he ever did. But this got us on the conversation of what beer was like in Vietnam. What did they drink over there? Was it any good? How much did it cost? What I learned was that beer in Vietnam was, at least back then, always a lager. All right, it was served at room temperature, and they'd serve either a bowl of ice or a big block of ice, so you could just put the ice in your beer to cool it down. And the beer cost around 5,000 dong, which is the Vietnamese currency. That equated to around a quarter here in the States. You can get a beer for a quarter, which makes drinking a case no problem, right? So the conversation's over, I start to walk back to my dark room, and then the whole thing hits me. I've got a work friend named Hung, who gets a job for his friend Fuck, who pays 5,000 dongs for a beer. If I need to tell you why that period of my life was one of the most memorable, and sometimes most enjoyable, you obviously have not been paying attention. I loved to laugh, and these guys were entertaining 100% of the time. I really miss those dudes. And it wasn't until years later that I actually finally tried a Vietnamese beer. 33 Export, I think it was. It was dreadful. So bad. And I'm told that when it's fresh, it's delicious. And I've got no doubt that's true. What happens to beer after it's bottled, boxed, thrown on boats, delivered to the States, left around in hot rooms before it finally makes it to a cooler in a store somewhere, is one of the greatest food crimes. It ruins everything. And I'll tell you, I wanted to like the taste of that beer, but I couldn't. And I'm not flying to Vietnam to find out what it's supposed to actually taste like. I just wish they could do something about crimes against food items like imported beer.
Located just outside the Flatiron Building in Manhattan, restaurateurs Mario Batali and Joe Bastianich have opened Eataly, a 50,000-square-foot Italian food destination.
Eataly is modeled after a store that exists in Torino that is already perfect. So all we have to do is not mess it up. We're producing things in America and selling them here. We're also bringing some of the slow food greatness from the Italian peninsula.
The crown jewel is going to be a rooftop Italian brew pub, or birreria. Mario and Joe want Dogfish Head to collaborate with two Italian brewers to create signature beers for Eataly that'll be brewed and served right on site.
Although wine and food pairings have been trendy and hip, I think now this whole brew culture and beer-friendly food and food-friendly beer is kind of the next wave.
So when I stopped drinking around May of 2015, I turned my head entirely away from everything that was going on in the craft beer market. The handful of times since that I've had a beer, it's usually been something I brewed myself. Other times, if we're out somewhere and I decide to have a beer with dinner or something, I will almost always go with something I know well and truly miss, and that's always Belgian. And it's always the old standards that I used to love drinking. In those 2 years that I've been away, I cannot believe how much has changed. I don't recognize half the stuff that's out there. So I started doing research for the show, and I had to look at what the landscape is like now, because obviously it changed a lot. It's staggering. It was unbelievable. I went to the website for the Brewers Association to see the numbers for 2016, and it was impressive. To say the least, it was impressive. 5,005 breweries in the U.S. now. 99% of that are small, independently owned craft breweries. And you compare that to 10,000 wineries in the U.S. So that's half. What's the most popular style now? Of course, IPA. They represent a quarter of the total volume of beer brewed in the U.S., IPA. 65% of the people that they polled said that they drink craft beer because it offers more variety. That's a no-brainer. The export volume of craft beer in the U.S. grew 16% over 2015. Over 446,000 barrels exported, $116 million. And here was the number that stuck with me, 7,962. That's the number of entries in the National Homebrew Competition. There are now over 1.2 million people homebrewing in the U.S. It's created over 11,000 jobs, $1 billion in national spending. Not only that, 63% of consumers that they polled who select a beer do so based on a food item or a meal that they're planning on pairing it with. So there's the food connection. When I started podcasting with Hog Dog and Gonzo on Dude Night, we were all about pimping the craft brew scene. It was a guy show, but it was a beer show. And we were part of this group of podcasts that we called the Beer Safari, helping people navigate through the jungle of beer available. Because it was crazy then, but it's even more crazy now. I couldn't imagine having to do a show focusing on beer now. I couldn't keep up. Now, craft brewing at the time was back up on the rise. It had started to gain popularity in the early 90s, but fell flat in the late 90s. But once it got its momentum going again, it was off to the races. And when I started this podcast, I kind of continued doing that. I wanted to see independent craft breweries succeed. And obviously they did. I have always treated craft beer like I do gourmet cooking. It's artisanal, requires craftsmanship. It's art that you drink. My problem at the time that had been going on for years was that I was enjoying it too much. And it started to become this daily thing. Had a bad day, drink a beer. Had a good day, drink a beer. But it never stopped at a beer. I didn't know how to do that. I never did. So I had to slow down. When I realized that slowing down was always temporary and that I'd always find myself back to that spot, I was loving this a little too much. And you start to get worried, right? I told myself, maybe it's time to just stop. You know, that way you can find out, are you addicted or are you in this daily habit? And this habit, habits are hard to break. If I couldn't stop, and believe me, there were times I thought I could not stop, this was going to be a problem. Turns out, and I've started to realize this about myself, I get into daily routines. And this was the daily routine I was in. And once I got out of that routine, I was fine. So now, on occasion, when I do enjoy a beer, now and again, and it's usually very rare, it is the best feeling in the world to me because I'm able to finally enjoy the taste of something that I love so much. Just like pâté, a bowl of pho, a nicely cooked steak, anything. Then I go on and I do something else. I don't return to the well. And there's no desire to have that second one if I really truly enjoyed that beer that I had. And I always do, because that's why I go back to those things I know I'm going to like. I simply live in that moment because, look, if I've learned anything in life, it's that too much of a good thing is often a bad thing. Except for sex, of course. There's never too much of that. And even when that's bad, it's pretty good. Really, really good. Okay, what was I talking about?
Giant space?
Yeah.
You get 32 square feet to make all your beer, all right?
Did I lose at Rochambeau or something? So I'll tell you what, this is the tightest commercial brewery.
In the world?
It's gonna be up there.
So the menu's done.
Really?
And I've actually written all the recipes. So the flavors are gonna be of the older times. There's the pork shoulder hams, which is one concept of the menu. Yeah. Then there's homemade sausages, and then there's grilled meats or fish, and then salads, and then, in my opinion, what really goes really well with beer, there's a whole mushroom menu, there's a whole cheese menu, and a whole salumi menu.
Whoa, that's a lot of great food.
Hopefully us brewers can represent. Hopefully us brewers can hold up to this to level of standards.
When you come up here, what kind of beer, what are you inspired to drink?
The goal is to make beers that are in perfect keeping with what you guys do, food, and also referencing Italian brewing tradition everywhere we can.
Oh, Sam is a mythical figure in the beer world, you know, and I think you can taste it every time you have a Dogfish Head beer. You understand why he's the best.
Did you hear that? My beer clock just went off.
It's what time would it be in Italy right now?
It's 5 o'clock somewhere.
Let's go drink some beers.
Taste. Chefs never drink, we taste.
I mean taste, but we don't spit it out, do we?
Not unless we have to. Not unless it's no good.
We're going to make three beers for the Birreria at Italy. An English mild brewed with chestnuts, a classic Italian ingredient beer. An American pale ale made with Italian wild thyme. And our first seasonal, a wheat beer with peppercorns.
Look at these crazy things. Can we hang with those?
Bell peppers, yeah, sure. These are Balinese.
So what's the difference between something like that versus your traditional?
Well, like a real pepper, like a black peppercorn, is the fruit of a tree. It's the droop of a pepper tree called piperai.
Nice. So we're going to be tasting Belgian white beer.
We're going to put pepper in the beer? Is that what we're doing?
Yeah.
First, we try these long Balinese peppercorns in some Dogfish Namaste. Like Namaste, the peppercorn beer for Italy will be a wit beer. So dosing it with some of the pepper is going to give it a good hint of that final flavor.
Cheers, guys. Thank you for allowing us brewers to get our peanut butter and your chocolate for this project.
This is the first beer, sip of beer, had on the
Italy. On the rooftop?
It's good.
Tastes good before, it tastes good now too.
Does it? Is there a difference? Do you taste too much difference?
Not a lot.
Definitely on the nose, but not so much in the palate right now.
Yeah.
Beer is really, has a lot of craft in it. And there's a lot of creation and a lot of human input in the process of making beer, and it's very similar to cooking.
We then dose some Allagash white beer with some Tellicherry peppercorns.
Whoa.
Blank steak.
It already smells like a steak, right?
I like this pepper better, I think. What do you guys think, though?
Not even a comparison.
Really?
It's definitely the way to go.
Yeah.
What's really exciting is to have a collaboration with the whole brew world. Like, that's just never been part of my game. I've always drank beer. I grew up on a hop farm. But knowing and meeting these kind of Zen mastery dudes who have these incredible groupie followings and getting to meet and work with them is what's really exciting.
Well, thank you for inviting us crazy brewers into your world.
Dude, you are now in it, whether you like it or not.
With the opening of the Italy Birreria close at hand, Mario and I decide to meet here again in just 2 months so he can taste all three of the signature Italy beers.
So I'm going to assume that most, if not all of you, have tasted craft beer. I know I have a large contingency of beer aficionados listening. Some of you brew yourself. So I know that none of what I'm about to say here is going to fall on deaf ears. Craft beer is real beer. Nothing against any of you who prefer to drink Budweiser or Coors or Miller or even PBR. All right, but the beers that have been around the longest are beers from Europe, even Africa. And the big beer brands are, at least to me, a very poor representation of that. What craft beer brings to the table is variety, authenticity, and a reason to bring you back for another one. They're delicious. Now, I prefer the beers of Belgium, but I also like IPAs. I have liked stouts and pilsners, the whole gamut of styles and flavors. My question is, what's yours? If you had to play Desert Island and had to take only one bottle of beer with you, what beer would that be? Name that beer. All right? Now imagine making that beer yourself so you could have an endless supply of that beer on hand that you crafted yourself and at a fraction of the cost of what you'd pay for it in stores. If you really love drinking good beer and you're capable of making a cup of tea, there's no reason in the world why you can't brew beer at home yourself. Sam from Dogfish Head said it best, if you can drink beer, you can make beer. And I'm embarrassed to say this, but I've been homebrewing since 1991. And I'm embarrassed because you'd think after 26 years I'd be a fucking pro at it, and I'm not. I'm okay, but I know guys who got into it, and a year later they're making beer so good that they're opening a brewery and selling it to people. Homebrewing is more approachable than you might think it is. It costs very little to get started, under $100. And that single investment in equipment will bring you more pride, joy, and satisfaction than anything else you'd spend that money on, even sex. All right? Now, if you don't know the first thing about this, I am not the guy to teach you. That man is James Spencer at Basic Brewing Radio. No one, not even Charlie Papazian, has made brewing more approachable, in my opinion. He will dumb it down for dummies like me. And it's not just the basics. He'll get you going on the basics. Easy. But then he'll get you doing things you never thought of doing. Last week, he featured a video where he made a basic pale ale that he funked up with a SCOBY culture from a batch of kombucha that he made. It was light on alcohol, tart, just the right amount of bitterness. And it was another one of those times when I realized that James is the ultimate tinkerer who can make the bizarro world of experimental brewing kind of seem normal. He's a true craftsman, an excellent teacher, and his videos kind of remind me of Mr. Rogers in a dude-like way. I mean, I don't mean he walks in the door with a cardigan and takes his shoes off. And James is definitely into women, unlike Mr. Rogers. Not that there's anything wrong with that. What I mean is that he lays things down in a neat way, clean, easy to follow, makes you want to visit him in his kitchen and brew with him. And that's what made Mr. Rogers so fun when we were kids. You wanted to be there, crafting things with him. James Spencer, the modern day Mr. Rogers for men. Just a shitload less creepy. BasicBrewing.com. Follow him on Twitter. Buy his app. It's $2. This app is great. You get access to all of his videos, his podcasts, everything. You will not be sorry, I promise you. He will dumb this shit down for you in ways I never could. But I'm going to try, all right? If you live in an area that has a local homebrewing supply store, visit them. Just go, check it out, and look into a basic homebrewing kit. If you don't have a store nearby, there are tons of online stores. Northern Brewer, Beer Beer and More Beer is another one. Williams Brewing, here in San Leandro, where I like to shop. They generally cost anywhere from $60 to $80 and up, and include pretty much everything that you'll need to brew beer at home. Basic kit. Sometimes includes bottles and caps, everything. You can buy ingredient kits for about $30 and up, and that'll net you about, say, 48 bottles of beer. And that's less than $1 a bottle for a home-brewed, handcrafted ale that you made yourself in your kitchen. It would take me an hour to give you a step-by-step detailed rundown of how to brew beer. But to make it as simple as I can, to the process, just to kind of get you an idea of how easy this is. As I said, if you can make a cup of tea, you can make beer. But I say tea here because it's basically the same principle. Steeping. Okay, a few added steps, but it's basically very, very easy. Four ingredients: water, malted barley or wheat, hops, and yeast. And the process is the same for every batch. The ingredients and hop rates change depending on what you're making. But basically, you heat a large volume of water to, say, around 150 degrees. You add malted barley, allow the grains to steep in that water for 1 hour. Malted barley contains a lot of starch, and when it steeps in that hot water for an hour, those starches convert to fermentable sugars that the yeast will eat later to produce alcohol and CO2. When the hour is up, you separate the grains from the water, collect the water in a pot, and rinse the grains with more hot water. Now, this washes all the remaining sugar off of those grains. What collects in that pot is your wort, which will be your beer when you're done. Turn up the heat, get that wort to a boil, start your countdown to 1 hour, start throwing in hops. The hops you throw in at the beginning, these are your bittering hops. This is what gives the beer the sharp taste. 50 minutes later, you add some more hops. These are flavoring hops that you actually taste in the beer. At the 60-minute mark, you remove the beer from the heat and add some more hops. These are for aroma, what you smell when you bring that pint to your nose. Chill the beer down to around 75 degrees as quick as you can. Transfer the beer to a fermenter. Add the yeast. Shake it all up. Get some oxygen in there so the yeast have something to breathe while they do their magic. And beer ferments for 10 to 14 days. When the fermentation is finished, you transfer the beer to bottles that have some sugar in them, cap them, and the suspended yeast that's still in the fermented beer eats that little bit of sugar, creates CO2, gives your finished beer bubbles, and a nice big foamy head. Now, for a simple version that you can make in your kitchen, and this is not a recipe, all right? This is an idea for a very simple beer, a pale ale, whatever can be accomplished in just a couple of hours in your kitchen. You don't need to convert grains with a recipe like this. You don't need to rinse anything. It's a pour, mix, and boil situation, but the steps are pretty much the same for how all beer is brewed. You would heat 5.5 gallons of water in a kettle to around 160 degrees. Turn the heat off and pour in 6 to 8 pounds of liquid or dry malt extract. Stir it all up so it's completely mixed in the water. Bring the heat back up. Bring the whole thing to a boil. Once the boil starts, you start your stopwatch to count down for 1 hour. Add an ounce of hops, whatever hops are called for in your recipe. These are bittering hops again. 10 minutes left in the boil, add another 1/2 ounce. This is for flavor. When your stopwatch reaches zero, add another 1/2 ounce, remove the pot from the heat, and you've got your aroma hops. You put your pot in a large tub of ice water, chill it down until your beer is around 75 degrees or lower. Transfer your beer into a fermenter, usually a plastic bucket that has an airlock attached to the top. These look like those giant plastic buckets you'd buy at Home Depot for around, you know, $8, except these are food grade and they usually hold 6.5 gallons. Pitch your yeast. It usually comes in a liquid vial or a small foil pouch of dried yeast. Cap the fermenter with a lid. Shake the shit out of it for a few minutes. Get some oxygen in there. Pop the airlock on top and you're done. Within 24 hours, the yeast will start to do its magic. You'll see some signs of fermentation and you're off to the races. The yeast eats the sugar in the malt, creates alcohol, produces CO2, and after 10 to 14 days, it's done and you bottle the beer. Now, a lot more steps in making tea, I get that, but not that much harder to do. I mean, you people are home cooks, for Christ's sake. This is easy for you. Again, this is not the way everyone makes beer, not how I make beer. This is just a general idea of how easy it is to make beer at home. There are a lot more steps involved. All right, if you're making something specific, and the yeast provides most of the flavor. Now, you can brew the same beer over and over, all right? But in that same recipe you use, if every time you pitched a different variety of yeast, you can make a multitude of different beers simply by changing the yeast. That is the beauty of beer. White Labs does this. They've got a tasting room down in San Diego. Well, they'll make one batch of beer. They'll divide it three ways. And they'll pitch three different yeast strains in the three parts of the beer. And it produces three radically different tasting beers, all because of the yeast. Okay, basicbrewing.com. Do it now.
My folks on both sides are Italian and come from Calabria and Sicily. And my great-grandmother had this grocery store in Massachusetts where she was known for her Italian sausages, but for her really good customers, she'd fill up generic jugs that they'd bring in with her homemade wine from the cellar. And I grew up watching my uncles and my dad make wine together, and I think that kind of influenced my decision to get into home brewing, which is kind of great because that's why I'm here. I'm actually getting to make beer in Italy.
I've cooked with beer a lot. You know, I still cook with beer. It provides a lot of character to dishes in the same way wine does, and sometimes equally as complex. The story that sticks out the most for me was the time our friend Jill, who was an incredible cook, maybe one of the best accomplished home cooks I've ever known. She just taught me so much in the kitchen. She had invited us over for dinner one night. She was making beef bourguignon, and I'm a sucker for that. We get to her house, and the place smelled amazing. Usually smelled amazing, but this time it smelled really amazing. She said she had made beef bourguignon a little differently this time. She said instead of using burgundy in the dish, she used beer. And I asked what kind of beer she used. She says, oh, what's that beer you brought to us last time? I tossed the whole entire bottle in there. And I thought for a second, what did I bring them? I remembered what I brought them. It was a really pricey 750 milliliter bottle. It was a Belgian Trappist. It was like Westmalle or maybe Golden Drac. It was expensive. I remember it was like anywhere from $20 to $25. and I thought they'd enjoy drinking it. I was appalled that she didn't even bother tasting this thing, just throws the whole bottle of really great beer into this stew. But when dinner served, holy shit, was it incredible. Now look, I'm a purist of French cuisine sometimes, right? This was not beef bourguignon. This was beef stew made with Belgian beer. But it was a damned fine beef stew. What it taught me was the power that beer has when you cook with it. It's not just for drinking. The finest of beers can elevate the complexity of something as peasant as beef stew. And not to do too much pimping of my friends and their talents, but Sean Paxton, who we've had on the show before, the homebrew chef, that's the man you want to go to when you want to look into the thousands of things that you can do with beer and food. Homebrewchef.com. Damn, I am a slut today. Pimping everything. Hey, look, I'm just providing resources here, all right? Trying to get you guys to branch out if you haven't tried it already. There's a ton of information out there, and I've got some very knowledgeable friends who can bring a lot into your life if you just let them in.
Brian Selders is working on a bottle-conditioned beer called Namaste, which is what Mario and Joe drank during our initial rooftop meeting.
This is our take on a Belgian wit beer, and it's flavored with lemongrass, coriander, and organic dried orange slices. Traditionally, these beers are bottle conditioned, and we want to stay as true to that as possible.
The process is the same for both bottle and cask conditioning. After you ferment the beer in a standard fermentation tank, you send the beer to the cask and add additional sugar and yeast before plugging it up. The yeast eats the sugar and creates CO2, thus producing a naturally carbonated beer.
Today, what we're doing to get this beer ready for bottle conditioning is adding a good, healthy dose of sugar. We're gonna get the sugar in there early just to make sure that the beer is ready to go. And then when we receive confirmation that the bottle line's been turned over and it's ready to run, that's when we'll pitch the fresh yeast.
It's definitely tricky to get the right amount of sugar and yeast into the bottle for the second fermentation. And at Eataly, it'll be Brooks's job to get it right.
So years ago, when Kat and I would visit Ludo and Chrissy's house for parties, I'd always bring bottles of my homebrew to share. Now, often I'd leave bottles for Ludo to enjoy after we'd left. He grew up in Burgundy, all right, so his life was always filled with wine, although he loves tequila. I started to notice that he was playing with beer in some of his recipes at Ludo Bites, then started offering beer pairings in the later versions of Ludo Bites. He really warmed up to the idea of pairing beer with certain food and even incorporating beer into the dishes that he was making. He once had expressed interest in learning how to brew beer with me, which is something I really wish we had gotten a chance to do together, but we never managed to find the right time and get together to do that, and then cancer came back. So I know I've been talking a lot about exploring season 5 of Mind of a Chef with you that featured Ludo. The problem I've been having with sharing that with you is that while I have no problem understanding Ludo, some people still do. And when you're not able to watch his lips when he talks, it becomes a little difficult for a lot of people. So audio only presents a challenge. And the audio that I started to pull to prep the show that I wanted to do for you just seemed too big of a hurdle. I love Ludo's English. I think he's done a phenomenal job with it. But the last thing I want to do is put you through half of an hour of audio that you'll have to work hard to understand and it won't be as enjoyable. But there is one piece of audio that I do want to share because it pertains to this show on beer today. And just this one thing, then we'll wrap the show up because it seems like I've been talking forever and I'm sure you've got more to do with your day than to listen to me ramble and tell stories of ex-workmates of mine power drinking a case of beer. In the last episode of Mind of a Chef, Ludo invites all of the LA food bloggers that he and Chrissy felt were most responsible for their success with Ludo Bites. This included Joe and Kevin of Kevin Eats. If you haven't seen season 5 of Mind of a Chef, you should do that. It encapsulates everything Ludo is about as it pertains to his creativity and his passion, his inspiration for food, and how he comes up with new ideas, what he's inspired by. Anyway, so they're in his kitchen, and he's making all these greatest hits from Ludo Bites. Near the end, he's going to make his dessert, and it was one of my favorite desserts that he ever made in all the times that I ate at his pop-ups. Panna cotta with caramel, topped with caviar. It's ridiculous. Fiendishly good. As he's about to serve it, one of the food bloggers, I don't know his name, starts to pop a bomber of beer that he brought along to pair with Ludo's dessert. Unbeknownst to Ludo, who loses his shit.
You're not going to drink beer with that? No. I'm sorry.
You can. This is a dessert beer.
But not with that. Not with caviar.
How about we just drink this
before? That is sabotage. I'm sorry, bro. That is really like, too much. Oh, my God. Beer with caviar.
I guess pairing beer with Ludo's food is fine, just never with caviar. I sense, and it doesn't take a brain surgeon to figure this out, I sense that he sees this as the greatest hate crime against his beloved dish, like some kind of a blasphemous gesture to degrade something as decadent as caviar with a beer, even a dessert beer, which I have to tell you is probably my least favorite when it comes to different styles of beer. I hear someone say dessert beer, and all I can think about is a massive headache that I'm going to have tomorrow morning. They're cloyingly sweet, way too high in alcohol, and very few dessert beers that I've tried have done an adequate job in complementing any dessert that I've tried to pair it with. Ludo actually opted to serve champagne with this, and I thought that was the right choice.
Today is the day we've been preparing for. Mario will taste the three beers that will make or break his brew pub at Eataly.
We take a lot of pride in what we do at Dogfish, and I know Teo and Leo do as well, so our pride's on the line trying these beers with him.
There he is. What's up, Dog?
Good morning, Mario. How you been? Oh, you're cooked. You're...
Wow. I'm preparing things.
Wow. You know, Mario is kind of the dawn of Italian-American cooking here in New York, so having him try these beers and giving them his wave of approval will mean a lot for us. Kind of welcome us into the family kind of thing. By the way, I got my I'm wearing the wrong, I'm sporting the wrong.
Dude. It's like stabbing me in the eye.
So you tell me what you want to try first.
Let's start with the lightest and go to the heaviest.
Okay. Whoa, hey.
Where's the Lusitania?
That wicked carbonation is bottle conditioning.
Right.
With bottle conditioning, it's going to give you finer bubbles than forced carbonation.
Right.
It's not as heavy on your stomach, so you get more of it.
Oh, cool.
First up, Gina. The Thyme Pale Ale we brewed at Leo's Brewery outside of Rome.
You like?
I like it.
Do you get the thyme? It's not overpowered, or do you
no,
think?
No, the thyme is very delicate.
Yeah. More in the nose or the taste?
Yeah, it's more in the nose right now, but I mean, let me just take a little food.
These beers are designed to be drunk while eating Mario's food. The menu, among other great recipes, include 10 types of mushrooms, 10 cheeses, and 10 different sausages, a few of which we'll be sampling today.
That's delicious.
Now I get more thyme.
Yeah.
There's more time in the beer, because it pushes it forward with the porky saltiness.
All right, so I'm most nervous for you to try the peppercorn one, since you had a hand in that recipe.
That's I remember, one. Yes.
Next, we have Sophia, our peppercorn wheat beer.
That is a new experience.
Yeah?
Delicious.
You like?
Mmm. That's going to be the big hit.
Think so?
The big hit, I can tell you right now.
Finally, we pour Vanda, our young and dark chestnut beer.
Wow.
We pair it with a spicy sausage and a jalapeno pesto.
Does that work? Does it kind of put the fire out a bit?
No, it's just right. It joins the fire, but I think the meat and the beer match each other very well. I was actually worried that maybe the beer was going to overpower it, but clearly the lightness, the texture, the frothiness, the beers are perfect. You know what you're doing.
Oh my God.
Congratulations.
Well, thank you on behalf of Teo, Leo, Brooks, everyone. And
this may become my favorite restaurant I've ever opened.
Really?
Yes.
I like hearing that. It's been really neat seeing him get into beer. I mean, he was already a beer lover, but seeing him get excited about this potential for beer to pair well with food has been really inspiring for me.
Bam. There you go.
All right, so I'm out of here.
And that's all I've got for today. I think I've covered it. Thanks for tuning in. Audio in this episode from Discovery and PBS. Music from Touch Sensitive and Break Science. If you like the music, visit mylifeasafoodie.com. Buy the songs, support the artists. And don't forget to visit our sponsors. Help keep this show afloat. Until next time, my name is Phil, and this has been My Life as a Foodie. Get out there and brew some beer. Cheers. I got that loud, that fire in my pocket. The prayers and marijuana, that's why I'm gonna rock it. Till you try it, light it up and start a riot.
they say you got it.
I ain't got it.
Yeah, you got it. Your body, you're right. Don't be lying, mommy. Look up in the sky. It's a bird. It's a plane. I got some friends like Eminem with a chainsaw. We harassing your girlfriends with prank calls. I know some people wanna get high, but it ain't y'all. Reggie acting a fool. No way I'm gonna lose. I carry on till they all be laughing at you. She got it, so she give daddy half of the loot. New York tour.
Got it, who got it, who got it, who got it, she got it, who got it, who got it, who got it.